Relaxing with a hot chick and a cold beer on a warm day. Some way I gotta make it happen, cause a dollar is worth nothing if you ain't got more to stack it in. Some say the facts don't lie, but my pockets are empty, my stomach's rumbling and my mouth is dry. Some say others pass by, but it's the ones that pass away that make us wanna stay alive. And so I say I cannot die, not why people rely on me to provide. And yes, I may stray from time to time, but my past always brought me back around to see the brighter side. I pray rainy days will stay away, because my umbrella is broken and the sunshine never stays. And so I lay my heart into every line, because without emotion I'm promoting nothing with these rhymes.
I know it's hard for you. You've been trying to make it right. I know it's hard for you.
Somber from the things that we've all been exposed. We're supposed to be searching for something we never really find, so we hustle and grind, trying to make ends meet all the time. I find the more you try, the more you fail. So either cry about it or step off stage and give them hell. And mama, I know you're crying, cause I'm out of my own. I can hear it in your voice when I'm calling you on the phone.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. Man, I've got to tell you, I did something incredible tonight. Yes, I did. I just got through eating real authentic Mexican food right before we go on the show, and my mouth is burning. So I tell you, it's going to be one of those shows. I can feel it already. We're hot under the collar all the time. Now it's going to go full force. As usual, Dale the Truth, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good, my friend. How are you?
Well, I just explained that. Sweating up a storm, and it ain't because of the heat, man.
I know. The global warming's back. We're thankful for the global warming. I'm ready for this weather to be over and get back to good fall weather. But, you know, we had a good day today. It was a big day in Congress where something good actually got accomplished.
Oh, you wouldn't be talking about audit the Fed, would you?
Hell to the yes, I am. That's a bill that is right out of a book that Dr. Ron Paul wrote. I mean, hell, Ron Paul wrote a book called In the Fed. At least we're going to get an audit, supposedly. 3/4 of the House voted for this bill. So that's got to be a sign of the apocalypse in the book of Revelation right there.
Well, what's really interesting in that is, you basically had every conservative vote for it. I think there was like two that voted against it in the House. But miraculously, more than about 40%, yeah, Republican, not conservative, I apologize. But more than 40%
right.
of the Democrats, more than 40% of the Democrats actually voted for it as well. So, yeah,
it's
fascinating.
We want to do something else we've probably never done in the show. We want to thank John Yarmuth tonight for voting for the audit the Fed bill.
Well, I'm glad you had to say that. I was going to choke on this hot stuff I've got in my mouth right now, so I wouldn't have to.
I don't mind saying it. You know, like
no,
it's a broken clock theory.
Yeah.
I mean, he's very rarely, rarely right on an issue, but we do thank him for voting on the right side. Like you said, we had one Republican, some rhino, whose name escapes me, from New York, voted with the minority on this issue. But the bill went through with a suspended rules vote, which means basically that you had to have 2/3 to pass it. And they
right.
got 3/4. And the good thing about suspended rules is none of the Fed's globalist cronies could attach any amendments to the bill.
And that's exactly it. And if we want to look at something that we can actually say was probably bipartisan at any time, right now this would probably be it. Because, you know, to audit the Fed, the Fed has been Ron Paul's calling card forever. Nobody
yep.
can dispute that. And it's always been amazing because you couldn't really get the 2/3 majority to go with him on anything. And in this particular case, it's ironic because everybody says that the taxes are too low because of the Republicans, and the Democrats are out there wanting to borrow as much money as they can possibly do from the Fed to pay all the stuff that they want to give away. So, you know, in this particular case, give credit where it's due. And yes, you're right. John Yarmuth did great in that vote today. We're very proud of him. You know, it's hard to say that sometimes, but it is. You give credit where it's due. The actual vote, the bill actually had 270 co-sponsors. The actual
yep.
vote passed 327-98. Bob Turner of New York is the one, you know, come on, Bob Turner.
I don't know. I don't know who that's come back yet. I couldn't tell you. I hope he loses his election
to somebody
from the Green Party or something.
Well, there you go. Nobody knows who he is, so he's really a nobody. He's the only one that voted on the Republican side against it. There were 89 Democrats.
Yeah, one Republican did not vote. I don't know if I don't have the votes in front of me since I'm on the road. One Republican abstained, and we had several Democrats who didn't have the balls to go on record. I know some of them probably weren't there, like Jackson Jr., who's in the middle of his rehab or whatever. And then you had idiots like Sheila Jackson Lee who had a no vote. So I don't know how many of those were present and just didn't want to show any balls, or if they just weren't there. I think we had like 10 or 12 no votes and one Republican there. So, yeah, one Republican didn't vote, and one Republican voted no. So it was good to have all the Republicans on the right side for once.
Well, that's very true. I think the actual total, I have to look that up myself, to be honest with you, but I think the actual total was 7 that were actually no, you know, there were actually non-voters in this, not no votes, but non-voters. I'll have to double-check that number when I get a chance. But that was big news today.
Yep.
You know, we've also got all kinds of other things in the news today as well, some of which we're going to get to later in the show because we got bombarded last night at very, very late over the whole medical marijuana stuff. And in the interest of fairness, a lot of those people were coming in after 7:30 because they had a commitment. So we're going to be fair to them. We're not going to get a lot started on that till at least 7:30. But I want to go a couple of different ways. The Colorado shooting we've been following all week. We're now getting more and more reports out on this. One thing I thought was really interesting, DC, the comic people behind Batman, they are now postponing the release of their Batman Incorporated, which is apparently due to the Aurora shooting. Apparently the release of their next Batman comic book was due out. They were going to have that out sometime over this week or this weekend. And DC Entertainment has actually contacted every retailer they could find and telling them to please hold that for another month. They're not going to put it out for at least 1 month because of the Aurora shooting, apparently. Now, I mean, I don't know. This might be just another way to increase everybody's wanting to see the Batman comics and increase somebody's, you know, liking them again. But I haven't gotten into Batman things since I was a kid, okay? But apparently there's one spot in this Batman comic that has guns in it. DC was worried that it was too close for comfort to what just happened in Aurora last Friday, so they have postponed that release. And quite honestly, I think it says a lot about DC to feel that pain. I mean, if this is all about money, you know, they could have probably made a lot of money releasing that on time because everybody would have went nuts to seeing it just from the publicity alone. But they didn't. You know, this guy, James Holmes, that did this shooting, man, I tell you, I still think this guy is a cold, calculating guy. I don't think that he is really insane like he's trying to portray himself to be. But apparently he is trying to portray himself to be legally insane, which ironically was this brilliant science student's great field of study with schizophrenia and that kind of stuff. But from what we're understanding now, since he's been thrown in jail, he spends most of his time spitting on his jailers. You know, so at one point he had spit so much at the guards, they actually had to force him to wear a face mask just so he quit spitting on him. But here's some of the interesting things, too, that are coming out, because we have been speculating the last couple of days about, you know, the mindset of James Holmes. You know, we had speculated about how he had got his bachelor's degree in neuroscience, couldn't get a job, ultimately leading him to go to Colorado to join the PhD program, the National Institutes of Health, all the money, everything else he's gotten for this whole thing. But one of the things that I was asking so much about the last couple of days is, and I wanted to get more information, was how was he doing in school? Because we had everything was reported that he was currently withdrawing from school. But why was he withdrawing from school? And I tell you, I think we now have that answer, because he failed his oral exam. He was required to take a 3-part oral exam and pass that in order to continue in the program. He failed the oral exam on June the 7th. He failed that exam. So everything this kid had worked on his whole life just became a moot point, null and void. And that day, within hours, he went out and bought a rifle. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to mention the fact that, again, if the poor internet company and the thunderstorms don't keep us off the air tomorrow, I'll go into the whole false flag behind this. If people want to know what a false flag is, go up the Reichstag fire, go up, look at the Gulf of Tonkin, and you'll see what a false flag is all about. But moving that aside until tomorrow night, if we want to tease that, just the fact that this guy had tens of thousands of dollars in government grants and funding.
Exactly.
So you honestly could say, even if you don't believe in conspiracy theories, if people are living under a rock under there and they think everything is a lone gunman, and they think Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, and Sirhan acted alone, and all these things. If you want to believe that everything is just as the dead dinosaur tree media tells you, that's fine. But even if you want to believe that, people wondered, how do you afford all this artillery? Well, let's assume everything is as advertised. He got all his money from the government. So you can honestly say, in an A equals B, B equals C kind of logic, that the weapons he used to kill all these people was definitely weapons paid for by the United States government.
I think there is a credible legitimacy in that. I really do. I'm not going to go to the conspiracy theorist's name, but I also believe that we're spending entirely too much money.
I know you will. To say it's a false flag because he did not act alone. And the funniest thing, did you see the story, Ed, that came out today about he had sent his counselor or his shrink or whatever a box of notebooks and it told him there how he was going to kill all these people?
That's actually where I was headed with the next part of this. Sure. We've got a trail here. Now we can find the trail because he failed his oral exam on June the 7th, bought a rifle within hours of that failure, okay? 3 days later is when he started, leaving the neuroscience program. So at least back to June the 7th, the day he failed his oral exam is when he purchased his rifle. Now, that's a powerful statement there because now we can try to figure out where to track this from. Okay, now we can go back 4 months and found out that he had bought other weapons and gas and gunpowder and all the other things. But they are saying now that there was some strange behavior by him. When he came out of The Dark Knight Rises, when he came out of the movie theater, detectives immediately covered his hands with bags so no gunpowder would be destroyed so they could preserve the evidence. And then, of course, Holmes apparently began acting like the bags were puppets and talking to each other. Now, if you're trying to set up an insanity defense, I guarantee you that would be the first thing I'd do, too. If you're going to try to set up this defense for your own, psychic evaluation and everything else, but I honestly think this guy was doing this to prove a point. I really do. I don't think there's anything crazy about the guy. I think he's just operating on a level above most of us that defies rationalization. I don't think it's crazy at all. But
the only way, Ed, that I would give any credibility to the insane side, and I'm sorry, we always hear about how people use the insanity case for murders. I think you have to be a little crazy to murder anyone. But back to the fact of him being insane, the only credibility I would give to anything of him being insane is maybe all the big pharma, pharmaceuticals, antidepressants, mm-hmm. and other kind of pills that he was on. They might have made him crazy if you want to get into the whole series of Prozac and Zoloft, although Joseph Westbecker back in the day, that's about the only crazy connection I see.
But see, none of that is actually proven either. We don't know what he was on.
No.
He admitted, he said that he took 100 milligrams of Vicodin right before he did this, okay? So, if you remember Heath Ledger and playing the Joker in Batman, that was what killed Heath Ledger was basically an overdose of Vicodin, a drug overdose. So, if he was actually trying to fulfill the role and this thing that he set himself to do, of course he's going to set that game up. I think this guy knew exactly what he was doing. But it's really interesting to me because I've continued to call this guy, an anarchist and maybe an anarchist wannabe, and I get chastised for that. How can you say something you don't know? Well, the bottom line is, this guy was a wannabe in my opinion. When you look at the Black Bloc connection and everything else, he booby-trapped the apartment. But this is where it gets crazy because he's in jail, spitting at the guards, screaming at authority, can't stand cops, but then he wants to tell them his apartment's booby-trapped. So he was seeking glorification for his efforts. All right. This is a guy who's playing a game, and I hope that they realize that, and I hope that he suffers tremendously for it. I really do. But that's what's going on.
I don't disagree that he's playing a game. I guess maybe where I would go a little further, and again, I know some of the people who listen on Wednesday nights may not be ready for the TNT radio show. They gotta get small doses and work themselves up to what's really going on in history. But I would say it's definitely a game, except he's not the only player. There are other players in this game.
Well, I agree with that. You don't buy tens of thousands of dollars worth of stuff based on unemployment or student loans. There's many people out there that are abusing the student loan program. Personally, I think student loans should be used for nothing more than tuition and books. This whole living expense, $26,000 a year for living expenses so he can rent a place while he's going to school, screw that. I carried a full-time load in college, mm-hmm. and I worked two full-time jobs.
Yeah.
Those are excuses.
Oh, same here. Now, what were you just saying about his background? Remember, I want to make sure I bring up something that the audience may not know, and I don't know how many people get in the chat room tonight since I'm not not in front of the studio camera and in the desk. But my question for you is, remember what you said about his background, about trying to be a PhD in neuroscience?
Yes.
Remember that? You know who else was a PhD in neuroscience, Ed?
Who's that?
Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was a PhD in neuroscience.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know what? I hadn't even thought about that. I honestly had not even thought
that
about
that. The only thing is they got to Kaczynski sooner than they could get to this Holmes kid, apparently, and Kaczynski became more of a patsy. Now, the questions I have to ask people, again, I'm giving them small doses so they don't think they're listening to the Thursday night show here and they can come back for the truth if they can handle it. But the question is, how does one kid, and to me he's a young punk college kid, he is a kid, how does one kid go into a theater and shoot 70-some people by himself?
Well, the actual
anti-gun crowd... I know the anti-gun crowd will say it's because of those magazines and too many shots allowed, blah, blah, blah. But come on, more people would have escaped. I mean, are you really telling me people just stood there in line waiting for him to shoot him? More people would have escaped and not gotten shot.
No, Dale, I can see him being a lone gunman. I don't think he orchestrated this event alone. I think he had some help. But I can see how he could have shot 70 people. I mean, you think about this. You know, you're talking about a theater that's filled to capacity because this is the Batman, The Dark Knight Rises. Special midnight showing, a theater filled to capacity. The show was already started. Everybody's sitting in their seats, settled in to watch the movie, when he goes out the exit door at the front of the theater. Now, you know, I mean, you know as well as I do, when you go to these theaters, the exit door is right there by the movie screen in most cases, right there by the exit. There's nobody there. He walks out that door. He puts a bar in there or something to hold that door slightly open so he can get back in, gets his weapons, makes sure they're fully loaded, gets dressed, comes back in, and just starts shooting. It ain't like he ran in there and started shooting. He threw tear gas, and then started bang, 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 bang. It's not hard to get 70 people and shoot 70 people in that situation. And then you got to figure in the panic factor, too. If everybody was trying to get up and get out, you got bodies falling over bodies. You know, there's not that many people that were close enough to him at the initial shots to stop him. But certainly after he got a couple of rounds off, there was enough people in there they could have gang-tackled him, you know, or something.
Well,
more importantly, if they would have been allowed to pack, he wouldn't have had this problem in the first place. Go ahead.
Well, that's all I was going to say. I mean, I can go two different directions with that. So since you brought that up, my question is, when you have a crowded theater, and I'm guessing that's about 80 or 90 people in a theater, you're going to tell me now one of those people, the government, the state, the big state, nanny state, had every single person in that theater scared to conceal carry. I know that they talk about how there's the rumors that in Colorado the gun laws are so tight. Did a lot of good here, didn't it? But they talk about how the Colorado gun laws are so tight that if somebody had stood up to him, they would have been convicted of a felony. And I don't doubt that. That's how screwed up our government
Colorado's gun laws are very, very similar to Kentucky. They're not strict gun control. You're allowed to open carry in Colorado just like you are here. You're also allowed to conceal carry in Colorado just like you are here. In this particular theater, they had signs up, you know, that you know, said that guns weren't allowed. Now, criminals, of course, either can't read or don't care because they don't care about those kind of signs. And I'm like you.
I know.
Personally, there's a lot of places I go into that guns aren't allowed, that I've got a gun on me. And I do that intentionally. I've been threatened. I've had the gun pulled on me and everything else because of what I do with this show and the website. So, you know,
if Colorado gun laws was that lenient, because you kind of took the bait that I was going with there, Ed, if the Colorado laws are so lenient, then you're telling me that the government and through as we say now as we do with their stupid little signs with the line through the guns, the no smoking equivalent, no guns, you're telling me every single person in the theater was dumbed down or neutered down that not a single one of them took a gun with them?
Well, I would say that.
It's Colorado. It's not.
That's not really that hard to believe for me. Because, I mean, you know, when I go to theater, and you got to look, there were a lot of kids in that theater. I mean, you know, you weren't talking about everybody in that place was adults. More than half of those people, I would venture, and I haven't looked at the age range and all that stuff, but I've seen reports of kids that were shot as young as 7 years old in the theater. There was one lady that was shot, had a couple of her kids, you know, 13, 11, and things like that. So, you know, more than half of that theater were children. You know what I mean? If you have a lot of kids in there, then you can eliminate them from the capacity crowd that would have been carrying guns. And we also have to look importantly here, too, because a theater, you know, a lot of theaters will hold upwards of 150 people at a time, not 70 or 80. So, you know, if you look at that, that's a pretty good-sized theater. So, you know, there's a lot of things here that – that we're going to have questions about forever. I'm very interested in who financed it, because I still don't buy the grant money financing all of this. That grant money would have been gotten earlier in the year, and it would have been gone by the time he got around to June or July if he was using that to pay expenses. So, you know, I don't buy that that was his sole source of income and how he bought all these things. There's a lot more there on the financing. I can't wait to see. You know, but I want to get into this.
You're 100% right. The only thing, are we moving on? Are we still on the same topic?
No, we're still on a topic, because I want to get to this notebook you brought up, because that's where we were headed at.
Well,
we got sidetracked. This guy actually did telegraph this. I mean, you know, he had sent this diary on July the 12th that was intended for a psychiatrist he knows that teaches at school. You know, and he also included sketches of stick figures and everything else carrying out this attack. You know, he basically diagrammed everything that he was going to do, and this thing essentially sat at this psychiatrist. He didn't even look at this for two weeks. Now, I don't know about you, but I don't think I bring my mail in and leave it sitting in front of me for 2 weeks without seeing what's there.
I'm guessing that if he's willing to admit, I don't know the details. Did they say what the return address was? My guess is if he's willing to send that much of a telegraph out ahead of time, like you said, then he probably also had his name or some identifying marks or addresses on it. So you're a shrink, and you also have this client or a potential client who could be crazy, and he's telegraphing his return address if it is on there. Because why wouldn't you put a return address if you're going to draw pictures of the shootings and you just can't let it sit there all this time? I don't buy that.
Well, I mean, I'm totally with you. I mean, I'm totally with you. I don't buy that either.
What he said is he drew pictures of the assailants carrying this out. He drew pictures of stick figures in the theater and other stick figures, plural, ladies and gentlemen. He drew pictures of other stick figures coming in with guns to shoot the place up, which leads me to the only other problem with the lone gunman argument, Ed. That's a pesky little situation of six different witnesses who talked to three different TV stations saying there were multiple gunmen.
Yeah, I mean, that's very true. And that's one of the things
that's
got me caught up too.
That's why there was not a lone gunman. There were others involved.
Well, that's right. We've got more than one eyewitness account who says that there was another shooter there. And we've also been reported there's a second person of interest, but nobody's been identified. Let's go to the phone.
Oh, yeah, the old legendary John Doe number 2, going back to 1995, Oklahoma City, on the day of Timothy McVeigh supposedly masterminding the attack of the Oklahoma City building. Look up his death certificate tonight, folks. Go do a start page search or a Google search if you want them tracking you, and you'll see Timothy McVeigh's death certificate that employs U.S. government. Look it up. Don't take my word for it. But the old case of John Doe number 2, who we heard about for one day in the mainstream media back then, this Middle Eastern man who helped Timothy McVeigh carry out his bombing. I never heard about John Doe number 2 from the mainstream media again. It's the same thing again.
I think you're right. It's history repeating itself. Andy, you're on the air. What's up, my friend?
Hey, Ed, what's happening? Dale, how you doing, buddy? Hey, man. Well, like I said, you know, you were talking about that money thing. I can see a guy with a PhD program tutoring people, writing papers. We know that there's a whole bunch of papers out there for sale, okay? And this guy seems to have been intelligent enough to actually be able to sell some papers. There's a lot of ways you can supplement your income. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me. But, you know, this thing here with were there extra people, I'm kind of like with Dale now. And, you know, you get people that's always talking about what they're going to do, and it's a whole bunch of huffing and puffing. But you get a group of people, 8 or 9 people, and you go to plan and stuff, and you can almost tell that 90% of them are going to drop out in any, you know, out of one of these type of situations. So I wouldn't be surprised.
Well, here's the problem, Andy. Here's the other problem, Andy, and I meant to mention this to Ed Springsteen earlier. This kid runs out of the theater. We heard conflicting stories. He was outside the back of the theater. He ran out the theater, whatever. After this all goes down, this kid supposedly shot 70-some people by himself, which I don't buy, because there's 6 eyewitnesses that say it didn't happen by himself. But he's supposedly outside, and what is his story? He's so big and brave and bold, and he's going all as a Joker or Bane, you know, like his comic book hero villains. But when he leaves the theater, he just turns himself over to the police. Why is he afraid to shoot at the police?
Well, and that's what I was trying to get through earlier, because he booby-trapped the apartment so he can nail the police because he can't stand the police. He's proving that while he's in jail, but he voluntarily tells them about all of that. I'm with you there. Go ahead.
that somehow he's too cowardly to stand up to the police and shoot back. I mean, I guess that would be ultimately kind of a coward. If we were to believe the lone gunman, throw the gas man or gas canisters out, do this when people aren't suspecting it, and then just turn yourself over to the police, it sounds just like a Lee Harvey Oswald Patsy kind of story.
Well, it just appears to me, we talked about this earlier today, is that it appears that he didn't have this, the bloodlust in him seemed to kind of faded really quick, though. You know, because you talk about what, no matter what, 10 to 15 minutes? You know, what I mean, his whole adrenaline rush, it totally faded in 15 minutes.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. We hear stories, gentlemen, of you'll have some case, not the stereotype, but you'll have some case of a redneck in a trailer park somewhere making meth, and he's not afraid to go one-on-one with a police officer, but this guy just shot up 70-some people, and he just hands himself over to the police? I don't mind.
You know, I'm totally with you in agreement on that. We've actually talked about that earlier this week, because I'm with you. I don't buy that. There's something here we're missing somewhere, or we're not being told, which is probably the case in this situation. You know, but it is very interesting that we're seeing all of these things come out. I mean, the guy telegraphed everything he was going to do. And for me to believe that somebody in Colorado who teaches at the school has mail and he's at work every day and doesn't see his mail for 2 weeks just totally defies logic, in my opinion. I don't buy that. It sounds to me like somebody is in CYA mode at Colorado University. And I've got to be true about that. I've got to be honest about that. I'm going to switch gears, though, guys, because I don't want to spend a whole night on this. We spent a couple of days on this. I kind of want to switch gears. We've got a lot more stories out there. Penn State, yep. L.A. is trying to ban the marijuana dispensaries. We're going to talk about that. And lo and behold, Supreme Court health care decision, we now find out that there's going to be 3 million more people who aren't going to be covered under Obamacare. So we got a lot to go over. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll switch it around. Stick with us, folks. We'll see you in just a few minutes. This is the Ed Springer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Tim Hawkins. You can catch Tim Hawkins at timhawkins.net. This guy's crazy. He's got a bunch of songs like that I think you'll really enjoy. Call in 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. As always, if you want to comment, have anything to say, want to jump into the discussion, give us a buzz. We'll put you on there. You know, going into break, we've been spending all this time on this James Holmes, Colorado shooting case. And I'll be honest with you, we could probably do a show on that every night for the next 2 months and not be any closer to any answers than we are today or that we are over the weekend. But there are some other things going on in the world, folks, believe it or not. And one of those things going on is Penn State. The sanctions were put out by Penn State. And I've been following this story pretty close for a while. And I got to be honest with you, I was one of those guys who was a big Paterno fan. Still am for his football work. I still like Joe Paul for his football work. But what Joe Paul did, the Penn State University did, and this whole situation with Jerry Sandusky, you know, those are cowards, pure cowards in my opinion. So the sanctions were handed down to Penn State University, and I'll be honest with you, they were really, really harsh. Some I agree with, some I don't. But here's a list of what they've come up with. I want to see if you guys agree or disagree on this. Penn State, basically, from the NCAA, $60 million fine. You know, when you look at the fines and everything coming into play here, that's a huge thing. Well, it sounds really huge anyway until you realize that, you know, guess what? It's $60 million, but it's only equal to 1 year's worth of revenue for these guys. Yep. And it's actually going to total about $73 million by the time it's said and done because the Big Ten also had jumped in and gave them a $13 million fine. They're not allowed to get any kind of the bowl. I'm hearing some background noise. Is that Andy?
Yeah,
that must be Andy.
All right, I got background noise on your end, my friend. But to get back to the story, though, so they've got so basically it's going to cost them $73 million. It's a $60 million fine on the university. Penn State is going to be banned from bowl games and postseason play for 4 years. Their scholarships will be reduced from 25 to 15 per year for 4 years. You know, and here's the interesting thing, because returning athletes are able to transfer and be able to compete immediately. There is no 1 year rule like they usually have when athletes transfer. The NCAA, and this is where I start getting into problems here, the NCAA is going to vacate all wins of the football team from 1998 to 2011, and they're also going to update all records to reflect that change. You know, this is probably the one part of this I've got a real problem with, because the players on the field played those games, they won those games, and they are being, you know, they are being hurt for something that the administration did. I don't like that. What do you think about that, Dale?
Well, I agree. It's a bit much on one hand. It's one of those weird situations where when you usually hear about schools and sanctions and violations, we think about cheating, like the kind of stuff we hear at the University of Kentucky all the time. Mm-hmm. But this time it's something that's off the field, and I agree that I don't agree about Joe Paul. I always thought that either he didn't have a clue what the hell he was doing, so they did this all under his nose, or as they're coming out with these emails that he didn't know about it. But I agree with you that the kids that are involved now at the school weren't involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I'm glad that they're letting them transfer without a year's sitting out, because they had nothing to do with it. Usually NCAA lets the bigwigs get off scot-free or get off in other ways in Sandusky's case. And then the kids are stuck there. The kids can't do anything. So I'm glad they let the kids go free to another school if they want, let them decide if they want to stay there and help build the school back up, or if they want to go somewhere where they can – play immediately. Thank you, University of Louisville kids, and hit. But, you know, I don't think I'm too caught up on these wins and losses as far as them vacating all those games, because the kids over there, they know they won the games. I mean, anytime a school vacates a win, those kids don't really care, because it just pisses them off at the NCAA, but they still won the games. They still got their glory, and they can't take that away.
Well, see, I disagree with that, because, you know, everybody likes the old record books. I'm reminded a little bit. It's an entirely different situation. But, you know, Pete Rose bet on baseball. Pete Rose suffered. He's banned. He's banned from the Hall of Fame. He's banned from baseball. Will never be in the Hall of Fame and all this other thing. So Pete Rose suffered for his sins. Did the Cincinnati Reds get put out of business for 4 years? Did the players on the Cincinnati Reds team, were they held accountable to Pete Rose betting on baseball? And I know it's college versus pro, but to me it's the same concept. You have somebody in a position of authority, breaks the rules. Now, Joe Paterno won't suffer for this. He died. All right? Jerry Sandusky is going to jail for life. So Jerry Sandusky is getting his. If you want to take the rest of the administration that knew about this, yeah, I know, getting his. I got it. If you want
to
take the rest
of
the...
I mean, that's a dream for him, right?
If you want to take the rest of the administration officials who knew about this and everything else, put their butts in jail for aiding and abetting. And I have a serious problem with trying to hold the students responsible for something that they were in no way, shape, or form involved in, you know, by taking the wins away. I understand putting the program on probation. I understand all the sanctions, the five-year probationary period. I understand the NCAA getting involved, you know, and bringing the hammer down. I'm not sure why they didn't get the death penalty, because I think that would have been justified, you know, because quite honestly, they got off pretty light in the grand scheme of things.
Well, like I said, this is a different kind of situation. This is something that had nothing to do with anything on the field. And you listen to some of these idiots over at the four-letter network, ESPN, and they talk about, and they, I guess they were kind of defending Paterno, saying this is not on-the-field situations. Usually what we hear about when it comes to sanctions and violations, it's if there was point shaving or betting on the sport. And even in college sports, you look at the old Boston College point shaving days. You can look back under Adolph Rupp when UK was throwing games or not covering the spread. So usually that's the kind of stuff we hear about. And this is totally different. So I tend to agree with you that I don't want the kids punished. It's bad enough that they get to decide they want to stay with a sinking ship or transfer. But, again, the fine is $60 million. That's like 1 year to Penn State. The kids are not being stuck there. The kids can go to another school and play right away and go to a bowl game, and, you know, they go to another school. So I don't really see what the punishment is, other than, like you said, the 14 years of games being vacated. I think Joe Pa did know what was going on, and he's the one who dropped in the record books. I mean, like I said, if you were a kid like some of the NFL players and alumni that they interviewed, you got your millions. Penn State got you where you wanted to go, so you're not going to be punished for the situation.
But see, I mean, that's the whole thing, though. And, you know, it's not just the students who are playing the game. It's also the students at the university who support the program. You know, but see, you went right where I wanted you to go. The NCAA is supposed to sanction things that happen on the field that affect the integrity of the sport itself, you know, the gamesmanship and the other things. So did the NCAA go too far in their sanctions by pulling the wins away from the university because, the university students were the ones who played the game? Andy, I want to hear you on this. What do you think? Did they go too far with that?
Well, first of all, let's be realistic, okay? What the NCAA is actually talking out of both sides of their neck. Because first of all, for you to pull the games away from the kids, what you're actually saying is the players were in collusion. That this was actually a conspiracy from the ground up, okay? And that's not the case, okay? So you're punishing the kids, and then to me the most dangerous part about this to me is now they're engaged in revisionist history. Now you're gonna act like Joe Pa never existed. See, they gave these wins to Bowden, Coach Bowden at FSU, and he said, in essence, he was being gracious, but he didn't want them because they come with a stench, they come with an asterisk. But the NCAA, is cowardly in this situation because, Dale, I'm surprised you didn't bring it up. Not only did the NCAA do something, but Moody's is dropping their bond rating. Okay? They're dropping their bond rating. I guess they're going to be like,
that's very true because they've lost income. Right.
Right. So the whole thing is, to me, the NCAA, now the argument should be, since this is actually a business, when are you going to start paying these kids? When do they get a
I mean, there's always that argument. But the NCAA, I kind of see both sides, though. I've never agreed that kids should be paid because, again, once you start paying athletes, which ones do you pay? You only pay your school's good kids. You only pay your kids' starters, your school's starting lineup because, you know, a lot of sports, let's be honest, they only get to go to school. You know, a lot of people who are playing college field hockey and playing college swim and college hockey are being subsidized by the money that the NCAA and the schools make for football and basketball. We know those are the two sports that make money. There's very few schools out there that make money in both sports, and those are the two sports that subsidize all the other programs.
Well, Dale, I got one for you, and this is the problem I got with this argument. Mm-hmm. Basketball and football are the only two sports that you can play in college, but you cannot go out and teach. If you play, if you go to college on a tennis scholarship, you can go out and teach tennis to other people. You see what the baseball players do. They go play in other leagues in the summertime. What this really started about, if you really go back to the beginning of this, when they started bringing black players into Division I-A, they put this clamp down on this ability to make money, okay, and actually being able to control your, because, I mean, guys, we're always talking about freedom and being able, you know, to answer to the government. Who's more heavy-handed than the NCAA?
In this particular case,
I think the NCAA went way too heavy-handed, because I think the NCAA stepped outside of what their mission should be, you know, by holding the players accountable. That's my biggest gripe there. But, you know, when you look at this payout and everything else, I mean, $60 million is the NCAA sanction. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there saying, well, they only had to pay $12 million a year for 5 years that they're on probation. So it's just a fraction of what they normally get, 16% of the $73 million that they normally generate. But that's not exactly true either, because part of that $73 million that Penn State gets, $13 million of that comes from their share of all the bowl revenue that goes to the Big Ten every year. That's wiped out completely. The Big Ten took that away. So now you're dealing with paying money on $60 million, but that's $60 million income that's left over that they're using as a guideline today is going to be drastically reduced over the next 4 or 5 years. I mean, that revenue comes from licensing rights, from sales and things like that, and all the things that go with the organization that promotes Penn State. My bet is you're going to be looking at a situation where Penn State is literally going to be down to about $30 to $40 million max on what they're actually going to make a year. So when you put that in play, you know, $12 million out of $30 or $40 million is a lot different than $12 million out of $60 or $70 million. You know, so the money thing really probably isn't that big a deal to me. However, you know, if you're going to go so far as to go outside of your boundary and don't hold people accountable for what's on the field, because they didn't do anything wrong on the field. The players weren't paid. There was none of this point-shaving scandals, none of that crap. This had to do with a coach, you know, a pedophile, if you will, because some of these kids were actually under the age of 18. You know, you've got a pedophile coach out there running rampant, and you've got a runaway university who cares more about the program than the student. Hold those adults responsible for the administrative part of this and what they did wrong, but don't hold the kids responsible for what they earned. There's a difference between earning something and being a victim of it. And they just made the kids a victim. And in some ways, to me, that victimizes them as much as the victims, the real victims in this case, that were raped by Jerry Sandusky.
Well, remember, a lot of people were surprised. Remember, a lot of people were surprised when NCAA came down heavy-handed, because we thought for a long time NCAA was not going to do anything. And in honesty, I'd much rather they do what they did on Penn State than they give them the death penalty, which means you're not playing football at all. Remember, Southern Methodist University, yes, a Methodist University, folks, down in the heart of Texas, they were given the death penalty for gambling. So, I mean, I'm sorry, but when it comes to a Pete Rose or anybody at SMU, I see gambling as a lot less dangerous than doing boys from behind.
Well, you know,
well,
you got a point.
Now, come on now. Let's be realistic, guys. Gambling, to me, is a sin. That's an individual sin. If you choose to gamble, choose not to. But when you got an authority figure who abuses a child, and then you got an institution that engages in a cover-up, and you going to talk about gambling's worse? Good God.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think gambling is worse. And they got the death penalty for gambling yesterday.
I'm sorry, Jeff.
No, that might be the phone here. No, I'm saying why did you get the death penalty, and Penn State's folks up there did not.
Well, you know, around these parts... I was just going to say, around these parts, we've got more serious concerns than that, guys, because a lot of UNK fans are very angry today because they found out that Maker's Mark is actually going to help U of L, you know, build a building. So, you know, that's a serious concern around here. Yeah. Now, Maker's Mark is actually going to help finance and build a new academic center for U of L. So, you know, that takes precedence over Joe Paul. We wanted to make sure we got that story out there.
Andy said something earlier that I wanted to address, Ed. In some way, is a huge multi-billion-dollar business. And the thing about it is, I've had this discussion with people since you mentioned basketball players and basketball, and I had a discussion, I think Mr. Ed Martin and I talked about this, about free markets. And the fact is, when you're a kid going to play basketball or football at a major university, you do sign an agreement. Your letter of intent says that your agreement is you're going to do everything these coaches tell you. Hopefully it doesn't involve what Sandusky tells you to do at Penn State.
Right.
But you're going to do everything these coaches tell you to do, and in return, you're going to get free education, free tuition, free room, free board, all the free publicity you can get to skyrocket your career later. And they sign and agree to this agreement. That is a business agreement. They don't have to do it if they don't
want to. I agree.
But, Dale, I got a question for you. I mean, not to cut you off there, but, Dale, if you took the NCAA moniker off that situation, dealing with a 17-year-old, you can't even sign a damn cell phone contract at 17 years old.
I don't disagree with you. I think you're right.
Well, understand. Those agreements aren't signed. If you're under the age of 18, your parents are actually signing those agreements with you. So
right, your parents are signing the agreement.
You've got legal recourse here.
But where I'm going with this is this. How can someone – now, see, this is one of the arguments with me being a descendant of slave I got for the NCAA. Right now, if any of us can walk over to U of L right now, if I wanted to pay for my grandson's future college education today, they can tell me what 4 years would cost me for all three of them.
Sure.
Today. Okay? Damn it, you're not going to sit here and tell me that you run around here doing three a days, you got to do this. You got to show up and sign this. You got to do this. Dude, this is another form of slavery.
Andy, the way I would disagree with that is, going back to the basketball issue, we heard this a lot during the basketball season because that school down in Lexington had all these kids who played 1 year and went pro. And they kept saying, it's wrong that they had to go to school 1 year or they should go to school this many years. And most people didn't know the true agreement. That was not an NCAA rule. NCAA didn't say you had to play a year of college basketball. The National Basketball Association, those NBA, said you had to wait 1 year after you graduate high school. So that was not a NCAA thing at all. And again, kids could have chosen to go play.
Please let me finish my sentence. I'm sorry,
These kids could have chosen to sign a contract to go play in Germany, in Israel, or any of these world leagues, and they would have immediately made money, and after 1 year gone to the NBA. But let's be honest, these kids thought it looked much more appealing to go to a Lexington, Kentucky, or an Ann Arbor, Michigan, or a Miami, Florida, and play for a university first for 1 year, because that's where all the American girls were and where they thought they would get their star rocket into the NBA.
Well, I'll jump in here, man. You're on the air.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, hi, guys. Paul Hollinger here. Listen, I want to hammer just a little bit longer on Andy Hodges' point, because I think he's got a greater point than what he realized, okay?
Okay.
He brings up the age of majority as an issue. If these kids in Kentucky are under the age of 18, that is not considered the age of majority, and therefore they cannot enter into a legally enforceable contract, okay? Mm-hmm. So let's say that they do get mom and dad to sign that contract for them. Well, that's good for as long as they're a minor, but in about a year, they now are going to turn 18, which puts them as a legal adult in Kentucky for the purposes of contracts. You guys are assuming there's only one contract signed. I wonder, because I don't know, there might be two or more contracts signed.
Well, to my understanding, and somebody out there will correct me, I know if I'm wrong, but to my understanding, when you go to this scholarship position, these are annual renewable scholarships. That's why you see a lot of times where these coaches will have a guy. You'll see a lot of times where these guys will do that. Yeah.
Okay, so you've answered the question. So there are.
Yeah, now that's assuming I'm right, and I believe I am. Yeah, I believe I am right on that. That's why you'll see a lot of times where a kid, that went on a scholarship is willing to give up his scholarship, if you will, and they'll make room for somebody else to be a scholarship player. There are options on this on an annual basis. But it's interesting because, Andy brought up the situation where these kids are essentially slaves, but I'm more inclined to agree with Dale. My interpretation of a slave is somebody who's being forced into this with no options and no recourse. There's nobody that's forced to go to college and play basketball. There's nobody that's forced to sign a scholarship. There's nobody that's forced to go to UK, U of L, or anywhere else, insert name here. You know, that is a choice. So if you have a choice, are you still enslaved?
That these kids could choose. You could sit down, if you're an Anthony Davis, you could have chosen, you want to go play a year. And there are pro basketball leagues around the world. Even Rick Pitino will tell you some of the players that never got on the hardwood for Rick Pitino are playing for big money more than any of us will see overseas in countries that we can locate on a map. And
well,
you could be Anthony Davis. You can be Anthony Davis and sit down. You had a choice. You could enter into the contract to play basketball for the University of Kentucky and wink, wink, go to class. Or you could enter into a contract to play for a club team in Israel or Spain or Germany.
Well, that's the point, and that's the point I agree with, though, Dale. But that's the point I agree with, because there are options. It's not just going to school. There are other options. Andy, I want you to explain it. Go ahead.
Okay, well, this is what I want to say to you guys, and this is the part I'm talking about. Do you realize right now, like I said, I know I got some intelligent people on this line. Right now, Ed, you are not going to allow someone to use your likeness. You're not going to sign away your rights to your likeness or anything that you've trademarked, right?
Honestly, Andy, it would be my choice. No, I won't do it, but that's my choice.
But what I'm saying is you at right now, I don't know if you remember these guys, they played at UCLA, the O'Bannon boys,
mm-hmm.
brothers.
Yep.
One of them is suing the NCAA right now. Because the NCAA sold his likeness to EA Sports to put into a game.
Mm-hmm.
And see, this is the thing I'm saying. If now, I'm a firm believer in capitalism, but this is almost a P.T. Barnum scam. This is a Ponzi scheme.
Did somebody hold a gun to his head and force him to sign? Hold on.
It's not an issue of guns. See, this is the thing. You can only know or be in control of stuff that you've been exposed to. Now, even if you got parents, that don't mean that your parents have the legal savvy. See, this is the thing. This was also part of that argument with LeBron when he was in high school. See, LeBron was making money, but what's wrong? See, my thing is this. I don't have a problem right now. Like I said, if I go to U of L, Harvard or any school, they can tell me down to the damn dime right now what I got to pay for a 4-year education.
Sure.
And I'm telling you, there is a point where there's a diminishing return for the athlete, because the athlete it has to go to practice. The athlete has to do things that are outside the norm of the average student. You know, okay, let's take for example this guy that just did this killing in Colorado. Do you believe that he had to submit to a drug test to be in that PhD program, yes or no?
I don't know if he did or he didn't, but the reality, though, Andy, I mean, you know, this is getting a little off track from what you're saying. What you're basically implying, though, is that the athlete has no choice. That athlete did have a choice. That athlete had a choice to sign the scholarship agreement, and he has a choice whether to stay with the team or leave. If he doesn't want to go to 2 days, he can walk away. If you don't like your job, you can do the same thing.
Well,
right?
You know what I feel like with this?
Yeah, what's that? Here's my question I want to ask Andy. Andy, I remember the story of the O'Bannon brothers, but what I don't remember, you have to refresh my memory. Did these kids go to college for 4 years? Did these kids go to the NBA? What was their background?
The O'Bannons went for 4 years. But this,
did
this,
they go
this
to the NBA?
Yeah, they go play for 2 years. But this is the thing, guys. And this is where I'm at with this, okay? And both of us were in the military. You know what the most ironic things that we engaged in is what? Defending freedom when we really don't have it, right?
Right.
It's the same premise. When this is the only organization in America that we allow to control people's rights to earn money. Everybody can earn money except the people who are on the field actually doing the work. That's all I'm saying.
The point I was asking
go ahead.
The reason I was asking Andy about the O'Bannon brothers is I understand what you're saying. I understand the whole video game situation where they give the likenesses of what appears to be a player, but they don't put the names on it, trying to avoid that lawsuit. My my point I'm making is getting back to supply and demand, as it should be, is if these kids made it to the NBA at all, because I could remember, if they made it to the NBA at all, then they profited from their time in the NCAA. And if they're so famous, I'm not making the argument that they are on it, but they're so famous that their likeness is worth something, and the NCAA only has the shadow of their outlook to be on a game, then if supply and demand says that they're that popular, then they could create their own video game and actually have their name on it and say, here's the real video game, and then make money.
But they're already getting paid.
But what I'm saying is, all I'm saying is this, guys. At the end of the day, I understand. Let's really call it what it is. First of all, they're not teaching you a skill. You already have to be a semi-polished athlete just to even make it to a D1 school. Okay. All I'm saying in this situation, these people are coming to the table with altruistic intent. Because if it was truly a free education, then you wouldn't have to have all these stipulations, these two-a-days, these three-a-days, this grade point average,
What you're getting, though. I mean, an average NCAA player who's on scholarship is receiving a benefit of somewhere between $25,000 and $35,000 a year minimum. And that's not with a top-grade school. So he's getting paid $25,000 to $35,000 a year to go to class and go to two-a-days. Now, that's his pay. That's what represents the value of what he's getting. He's also getting a $500 a month stipend. All right? These guys actually do get some money for stipends every month. They do get cash to spend.
I'm being told that they don't get money. See,
they're lying.
The problem.
They're lying.
It's already been proven.
So here's the thing for me, and here's the thing. The Obama suit that you're talking about is they're basically accusing the NCAA of violating federal antitrust laws, because what they're doing is they bar former college athletes from profiting from any NCAA or college licensed products, video games, highlights, whatever. They use their image or likeness. Once their playing days are over, they no longer allowed to profit from that. The ironic thing is here that during their playing days, they're not allowed to profit from that. Okay? So it's a catch-22 situation, and I totally agree that the NCAA is probably wrong here, and maybe these guys should be paid by the hour or something. I don't know. But the reality is they are getting value for their money in the thousands of dollars every year, blindly. They signed that piece of paper.
No. I hear you about signing paper. Who's getting value for their dollars? Because, once again, it's not a free education by definition. Anytime that there's minimum, it's a barter system.
It's not a free education, but they're getting paid. They're getting paid. And free rent, free utilities, free food, they're getting paid. The value of what they're doing is in the thousands of dollars every year. You know, let's look at this as a reality situation. Ford sells a new Ford Escape for $25,000. I don't get $25,000. Ford gets the majority of that, okay? I don't get $25,000 if I'm a Ford employee. I get what they say it's worth to me, and I sign a contract that says I'm going to work for X amount of money, and what you make is your business. It's the same kind of a situation. If we're going to make this a business point of view, then it's the same kind of situation. The university makes millions. The athletes make paltry. They're basically getting everything in a monthly stipend plus, free rent and board and all that stuff. But it's still there to make a legal choice.
Yeah. Here's the problem with the lawsuit, and I don't know the details. Andy, you have to tell me, is it just the O'Bannon brothers, or is this a big class action suit with a bunch of athletes?
It is class action.
Right now, it's the O'Bannon guys. I don't know if all it takes is two or more for it to be a class action.
They've already had what you've got here is you've got Sam Keller. He's a former quarterback in Nebraska and Arizona State. He sued the NCAA and Electronic Arts and everything the year before the Obamas did. This suit actually started back in 2010. The original cases were filed by Sam Keller, for doing the same thing Obama's doing. And what they've essentially done is the feds have consolidated those two cases into one. So at this point, it can be considered a class action lawsuit. Anybody else can join it because you do have
two
players.
To me, I say let the market decided. The market is the best decider. I don't like any time the government's involved. I got no low law for the NCAA, but I think the two sides should get together, preferably with a private arbitrator instead of a judge wearing a big black muumuu. But either way, pick your choice, a arbitrator or a guy or a woman sitting in a black muumuu. And I think whoever is the judge/arbitrator in this case should look at the O'Bannon brothers slash whatever athletes are involved and say, hey, if you can go out today and make more money with your names and your images selling video games with your real name on it, then we'll tell the NCAA to cease and desist, and more power to you.
Yeah, let them pay for their own education. That's it.
The only reason I'm saying this, guys, let's be realistic, okay? When every time U of L, UK is on TV, they get X amount of money, okay?
Right.
And we understand that basketball and football carries the day for basketball and tennis and field hockey. We understand that.
Yep.
But this is the thing I'm talking about. When you got a coach that can go out here and speak at a Kiwanis thing, and you know they can sign up for $10,000 per speaking engagement. This kid can't even go out here. This is a kid that's got the 30-inch vertical, but he can't go out here and run a basketball camp.
But you know what? What's the value of the coach's instruction? What's the value of the coach's instruction to that player who's not running a basketball camp? This guy is getting an education to become a better player.
No, I'm not arguing that. But you know what? And we both know this. You can't coach God-gifted talent. Either you got it or you don't. And what I'm saying is this. Right now, Ed, it's just like right now. If 10 years from now, you become the man in media. You just say the stars align and you become the guy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody comes and says, "Well, you know, it's Frankston. I molded his career. I'm the reason he's the voice of America." Blah blah blah. Now,
I wish that statement was true. By the way, go ahead.
But I'm just saying. But if that happens 10 years from now I can go around and say, you know what? I knew Ed then.
Mm-hmm.
I could actually say our conversations might have helped polish his game. But at the end of the day, if Ed didn't step out there in that damn arena of ideas, Ed wouldn't be the voice of America. Okay.
And the only time he swallowed the argument, Ed. The only time he swallowed the argument, gentlemen, is if Ed signed a contract, which is what it is, when he was 18 years old, and said for the next 1 year or 2 years, or really just 1 year, because as we know, we discussed earlier, these scholarships are 1 year renewable. If Ed signed a contract for 1 year when he was 18 years old, and then he signed another contract for 3 more years, he's choosing to delay those glorious, luxurious days until he gets through that contract. He chose to do that.
I want to hear Paul. Paul, you've been silent.
It's only because I can't get a word in edgewise with you guys, you know?
I'll still hear it, my goodness.
Well, let's hear you. Listen,
Ed and Dale, you all can argue your point and position till the cows come home.
Mm-hmm.
But Andy's fundamentally right on the mark on this point. Now, there's a term that Dale is really familiar with. It's called involuntary servitude. In fact, he actually uses a piece of music for his show by that name. All right? So I think you guys are quibbling over something that is still servitude, whether it's voluntary or involuntary. I believe Andy's point was at the very beginning of this, is that, is it servitude a form of slavery? And that's the point, Andy, I think,
was
trying to make.
It's voluntary.
No.
I don't buy that argument.
When you guys sign up for the U.S. military, where do your rights go?
Uncle Sam owns you lock, stock, and barrel, but that was a choice.
Thank you. You are.
But it was a volunteer.
Uncle Sam.
I don't see that's a fundamental difference though, Paul, because I volunteered
Andy,
knowingly.
They don't want to admit you're right.
No, it has nothing to do with right. It has nothing to do with right. Where do we take responsibility? Here's the question then, guys. If we're going to go down this road and we're saying that, you know, your word and your contractual obligations don't matter because you don't agree with them, because you feel like you're a slave, do you
not
have any responsibility? But
that
do you
is
not
no
have
argument,
any responsibility
Andy.
Whatsoever? Hold on now.
It's a one-year contract.
Any responsibility when you sign that contract. At that point, when I signed that contract to join the Air Force, I told Uncle Sam it was okay to own my life. I knew that knowingly, openly, clearly explained to me, and I signed that piece of paper. Do I not take the responsibility that goes with that choice? Why is it somebody's...
Ed,
Because I'll.
That's not
Andy's
argument.
This is the question. You know, and you and I talked about this a while ago. Remember, I told you there was a letter on Yahoo. They found a letter from a slave owner who found one of his former slaves and wrote a letter to him and asked him to come back and serve him. And in essence, what the slave told him was, well, master, it's nice to hear from you, but there's a little issue of overdue pay here. Because although slavery was legal and that guy was property, he realized he had an X amount of worth. Okay, and this is and all I'm saying right now. And they had this argument with the basketball team that's playing right now, the USA basketball team. What's the boy that plays for Miami? Not LeBron, but the other guy. He was talking about they should get paid to play because you taking away D-Wade. Dwayne Wade said we should get paid because basically you taking away from my ability to make money.
That's the whole ever-loving point. Nobody is taking away anybody's ability to make money. As Dale pointed out, you don't have to go to that school. Go to Canada. Go overseas. You can make money playing basketball anywhere in the world.
If you think about it, what is it called in America? What is it called? Not collusion. What's the thing where you actually you're doing some stuff that other people can't even get in the market. What is it called?
Monopoly.
A monopoly. The NCAA and the NBA got a nod, wink, wink. Let me tell you something. If you remember the ABA took people out of high school. The ABA was a maverick league that did not sign an agreement with the NCAA. And that was another reason that the NBA had to crush the ABA, because they was getting that talent young, fresh off the streets. And
well,
the NBA was
taking high school players too until what, 3 or 4 years ago. The NBA was doing the same thing. So, you know, I mean, I understand where you're going with this, Andy. My only point, the only consideration I would have, I totally get that. You know, maybe these guys should be paid. I've never disputed or argued against that. You know, personally, I don't think they should. However, I do think that that's a contractual thing between the business of college basketball and the governing authority in the NCAA, and I'm kind of inclined to agree with Dale. Don't put it in front of a judge. Put it in front of a mediator and let them work out a deal, because I think it's something that could be done. And what you're really talking about here are bargaining rights. So now
I'm at the real micro level. I'm talking about a man's right to own his or her labor. That's just like every time, just like with property rights or intellectual rights. I'm telling you that if you right now, is that not the cornerstone of the American dream, to be able to take your God-given ability and take it as far as you can go?
And isn't that what they're doing when they make the choice to go to college or sign that dotted line, hoping to get into the NBA for the millions of dollars? They have that choice on which direction they're going to take to pursue that dream. Go play overseas, sit out the year between high school, hope to get drafted. You've got a choice there, Andy. I mean, that's the whole thing here. When we talk about the American dream and the God-given abilities, I'm total agreement with you on that, except, you know, if you're going to make a decision – a free, willing decision to sign that contract for that scholarship and everything that entails, then you have responsibility for that choice. So we can't sit here.
I would say.
What would happen tomorrow? Let me ask you this.
My Chi-Com phone battery is going to die soon since we're well in overdrive. So I'll just give you a heads up if I drop off and don't get to tell you all. That's the new world order, because I might drop off.
But here's a question, though, Andy. Here's a question.
Yeah.
There's obviously a market for high school players to attend college for free room and board and a stipend every month to play the game of basketball while they're pursuing their education. I don't have the ability to jump 3 feet off the ground. I do not have the ability, even when I was skinny, I could touch the rim, but I still couldn't dunk, okay? I'm only 5'10", so I'm not blessed with genes that allowed me to be a 6'5" or better that would be an ideal pick for an NCAA or NBA team. I've got a great long-range jump shot with no vertical whatsoever, okay? I don't have the physical ability to do that job. But I love to do that job. It's my American dream. It's my American dream to go play basketball. But I'm not given that opportunity because I don't fit some dynamic. Well, here's the thing. What would happen if we're going to go down this road? What would happen if the high schools in America said tomorrow, you know, if they came together and said, we're not going to allow these kids to sign contract scholarships to go to college unless they're paid players. They should benefit from their God-given talent and ability and the ability to jump 3 feet in the air or dunk a basketball behind their head. You know, we don't feel like they're being treated by the NCAA, so the high school associations across America are going to ban any recruitment from the NCAA for 1 year.
If the, right now, let's be realistic.
Would that be right or wrong if they did that?
No. Well, I mean,
it's never going to happen.
That's kind of a set. That question to me is a setup. Now, what I would say is this.
Not a setup. I'm just giving you a situation.
No, but it's a setup. No,
you're reaching, Ed. You're reaching. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. I'm in agreement with Andy. You need to listen to Andy.
The problem is,
if I don't get kicked off here by my telecom phone battery.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the problem here is we had a perfect example this year at the University of Kentucky. We had 3 or 4 kids, bare minimum, who decided to go to school for either 1 year or 2 years, and sometimes 3 years. So each one of them, after 1 year, decided, can I now go make my millions, or do I want to use the University of Kentucky and NCAA for another year before I can get my millions? They even have these projection lotteries where they can go out and do a little test and find out, if I leave college right now, will I make the millions? The scouts tell them, no, you won't. So they go back and say, well, I'll use the university for one more year until I can make my millions.
And let me add this to that too, Jim, because I like. Let me add this to that too. This college player would have never had the national exposure, would have never had access to that kind of exposure if he wouldn't have went to the U of K because they are nationally recognized. He wouldn't have got the same exposure as Dartmouth College. All right, and when he goes to the NBA and he gets those millions of dollars, is he required to pay back the value of his education for that 1 year that he wasted time that somebody else may have come in there and spent 4 years?
Ed, you argued against your own argument. Okay, now, if you want guarantees, this is the thing that you don't hear any of these colleges talking about. If it's really about the education, that kid's 4-year education should be locked in stone. Whether he goes 1 year and takes 10 years off to come back and finish his degree, it ain't about the education. It's about performance. And if it's pay for play, then let's be man and woman enough about it to call it what it is. That's all I'm saying here. But I think when I say the word, what?
you're telling me that it's okay. That it's okay for somebody to go to college for 1 year. Just to use that as a stepping stone to go to U of K, take that scholarship away from somebody who may be interested in that education for 4 years, because there's a lot of them out there. There's always walk-ons on every bench who would die for that scholarship, who are going to be there four years, who can play basketball, and they wouldn't be on that bench, who are denied a scholarship because NC regulations say you can only have so many. Hang on a second.
Yep.
So, I'm going to let you jump in, Paul. But here's the thing. So you're telling this guy that it's okay to screw his buddy and screw the university out of money that they've invested in him just to use them as a stepping stone. How serious is this guy about the university, the education, or anything else? Should there be a litmus test regarding that? Go ahead, Paul.
I got a question for you. Well, answer that question, how committed is the school to the damn student? See, the very thing you're saying right now is really where I've been going. Can you stand naked before man and God with that bullshit and say, my hands are clean? No. You want the student's hands to be clean, but everybody else on the other side of the damn thing is up to their ass in dirt. That's assuming
that these guys aren't disclosing what the reality is, and there's a contract there that is legally binding that has to pass the muster, believe me, or they wouldn't have a contract available.
I'm talking about from 0 to 17 years old. Everything we taught in America is to do what? Learn to be independent, to make money. If it ain't nothing but selling lemonade on the corner, cutting grass, running chores. You gonna
well, we
tell
also tell
me,
our kids they can't make money if they don't get an education. Paul jumped in. You wanted to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ed, your argument is degenerated into a classic liberal point of view.
I totally disagree. My argument is that you have free choice, and free choice has responsibility to it. Go ahead.
No, Ed, your argument has nothing to do with free choice. You're saying just because a player commits to a school that their rights end right there, they must fulfill a four-year contract. Nowhere in our society other than military. Ed, if you hire on with a company, and you use that company for 18 months simply to pad your resume and move on, what's the difference? What's the difference, Ed? You signed an employment contract for maybe 2 years. After 18 months, you said, screw it, I've got my resume enhancement. Let's go and go with another company. And, of course, then you've got the residual legal issue of whether or not your company's going to hold you to the contract. And at the upper levels of our society, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen, Paul.
But what you're going for right now, to me, is entirely different than what we're trying to get to here. My point is real simple.
If I sign a contract with an employer, hold on, Paul.
Let me answer this. If I sign a contract with the employer that says I'm going to be there for 2 years, and I don't fulfill the terms of that contract, that employer has legal recourse against me. I did not fulfill the terms of my contract.
But we're not
the
talking
NCAA,
about
well,
breaking.
We're talking about these contracts, though. I mean, now you're
Wait
trying
minute,
to be contract.
Ed,
oh,
Ed, you just said at the top of this whole conversation that these kids are signing one-year agreements.
Yes, I did.
You said that. So every year, if they want to change their mind, they're perfectly free to do so.
There's no doubt about that. The argument has been, you know, what are you held accountable to and what you're not? Do they sign one-year agreements? Sure they do. At the end of that year, they renegotiate, right?
Let's bring this back to the local situation.
Actually,
these three guys, these three guys that just left UK, how much money did they generate for the school?
What difference does that make?
Well, come on, it makes a lot of difference. Because either you're talking about honor or you're talking about value, the value that you added to this institution.
To me, it makes no difference. That goes back to the Ford analogy. Ford makes billions of dollars every year. Ford makes billions of dollars every year. A Ford employee agrees to work for a certain hourly wage. What Ford makes is not their business.
No, I guess
my phone battery is still here. Hey, I'm still here, ladies and gentlemen. Listen to this. But let me jump in and say this. Since my Chi-Com phone battery is still active, Paul made a point about a business, if you signed a contract with a business versus the NCAA. And the problem with Paul's argument is very flawed, and I can drive a big truck through the flaw in that argument, because the difference is there are some businesses that ask you to do that for a year, and they're called unpaid internships, and that's what NCAA is. It's an unpaid internship to get it higher up.
No, but see, you're making a generalization, Dale, and I was trying to zero in on Ed's specific point, and you guys are arguing this point like liberals do, and that is when you lose the point, you're bringing in all this other crap that says no.
Oh, actually, you brought in other crap, Paul.
I'm still talking about contractual language. Your point was contract employment, and a contract is only good for the length of the contract. There is no obligation on either party to extend the contract. You said, well, they simply renegotiate that. There's no loyalty required of either party at the end of the contract. So these kids can come at the end of their one-year agreement. If they say, screw it, I've had it with the school, they're free to go, Ed.
They've always been able to do that. Nobody is disputing that, Paul. The argument was that these guys should be paid because, the argument was that these guys are daggone slaves. No, the argument was that these guys are slaves and they should be paid because they deserve to be paid because they've got these skills and are living the American dream.
They signed the contract. They're for a year. They have no obligation beyond that year, okay?
I'm not disputing that fact. I'm not disputing that at all. The point is that they have responsibility for the contract that they signed, whether that's 1 year, 4 years, or 100 years. I don't care. How much UK makes is irrelevant. If they sign a contract, the states are willing to live within these rules, or these are the rules of the job, they agree to that, then what's the problem?
I haven't heard anything in this discussion that says that that's been an issue, whether or not the kids are living up to the terms of the contract for the 1 year period. I only hear these arguments that they're not staying 4 years, therefore they're violating the contract.
Oh, actually, that's the end of the argument. That wasn't the beginning of this argument. Go ahead, Andy.
Ed, you know what? Like I said, man, y'all got some beautiful minds, but this is the question I would pose to you on this in another. And let's carry this a little farther. You're talking about this situation here, and let's talk about the morality clauses these kids are under. Now, you're talking about them nobody having any loyalty. If this kid goes out here, and let's use the Cam Newton situation here. Cam Newton stole a computer, did all this stuff. You got kids that only the athletes seem to have this morality clause hung over their head versus Joe average student that gets in fights, come in drunk, come in high, all this other stuff.
Jerry Sandusky.
Hey, look, I'm not arguing that at all, but these other students that come in, okay, these guys aren't, you know, their education, if you're talking about scholarship students who are playing sports and are public figures accordingly under scholarship students, again, they agree to those terms on the contract. Now, here is where I would totally 100% agree with you. We go way too far in holding our students and our daggone young guys, these student-athletes, accountable to these morality clauses when, as you know, as Paul just pointed out, the Jerry Sandusky Penn State program and the things that went on with Joe Paul and all those guys, you know, these morality clauses, to me, need to be completely revamped because morality starts from the top down.
Yes.
Oh, so Dale, I'm in total agreement with you there.
Dale, you probably know this.
Dale John, his father.
Oh, well, Ed, you can ask him. Is Joe Paterno's retirement still being paid? Is Sandusky's retirement still being paid?
Yes, because, and I think that's a travesty.
And see, this is the crap I'm talking about. Right now, you get the kids getting kicked off of teams for doing crap that high schoolers do all the time, fighting and stuff. Oh, he broke the rules, blah, blah, blah. Look at the coach that just left U of L here. He was out there at the Razorbacks. He got caught with his little chippy 25-year-old secretary got in a wreck on the motorcycle. I mean, my thing is this. These kids, they don't even fit under the actual definition of student. Really, they're torn between a mercenary and an indentured servant. I don't know which way to fall with it.
Once again, it's just the whole servant thing that bothers me. That language bothers me because it's a conscious choice to sign that piece of paper and agree to those terms. I think that the terms should be made different. I agree with you there. I think that things should be negotiated a little bit different. But, you know, the reality is that you agree to a certain thing anytime you go to an employer. Anytime I've ever worked a job anywhere, I've signed a piece of paper agreeing to certain terms and conditions, whether that was pay, whether that was benefits, whatever. There was a list of things that I was held accountable to that I agreed to do in exchange for their employment and a steady paycheck. So for me, it's no different from that student-athlete who joins the UK on a scholarship program. They have that same option. They can choose to agree or they can choose not to work it and walk away.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I've been in the union for 16 years, and I'm going to tell you what they can't do with my image. If the International Union of Operating Engineers my image gets to be becomes a regular in a circle of pictures, damn it, I got a right to get paid for that.
But you don't have something in contractual language in writing that tells them they have the authorization to use your image. Every scholarship has that in there.
Yeah,
every scholarship has that in the contract. They have agreed to that.
All I'm telling you, at the end of the day, if you took the NCAA off this conversation and you no other business other than the military, any other organization that's allowed to operate with that level of impunity other than the NCAA.
And it's all contractual. Andy, I've got to wrap up, my friend. We've only got a couple
right,
minutes left on time. All right, I appreciate
and
you.
I owe you an apology for this long debate over something we ain't got no control over. But it's just
you
it's
know
so
me better. Never never
me.
Apologize. That's the great thing about free speech in America. That's one thing we operate on this show. We want the discussions. We want the conversation. We want the communication. Never apologize for giving an opinion, Andy. You know I love you, buddy. Don't ever worry about that. All right. Thanks for calling in.
Paul, thanks for the backup, buddy.
We'll talk to you soon, my friend. Thank you so much for the call. You know, folks, it's going to be a wrap for tonight's show. You know, we got into a lot of things. Man, you know what? Everybody keeps telling me I need to talk sports, sports, sports. Now I know why. Makes time go by real fast. We are well into overdrive. You know, we didn't get to the discussion on legalizing marijuana. You know, unfortunately, that was one of the areas I wanted to go down. We'll set that up for next week sometime. And the reason for that is real simple. This just went a lot longer. You know, Los Angeles County is now banning medical marijuana shops. So I'm sure that Dale will get into that a little bit tomorrow night. Don't forget to listen in to TNT Thursday Night Truth with Dale the Truth Gillespie right here on the MVM Radio Network at 7 tomorrow night. And, you know, stay tuned. It's been a great, great hour and a half. We appreciate you listening, and we will catch you on the flip side. Take care. Have a great night. Get my kick.